on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial Executive Vice President, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. This is our Tuesday, November 10th edition of InvestTalk, and we are here, as always, to help you make some forward progress in your race to retirement. And it might seem that way at times, you know, it can be difficult to make that progress, but working to build a nest egg that will see you through your retirement years is important for everybody, and it's something that you have to be constantly thinking about, not 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but regularly thinking about. And managing risk is a priority our managed accounts at KP Financial have, and we're in the business of preserving capital, and that's job number one. And it's, you know, it's hard to make forward progress if you're losing money. And of course, diversification is key, and that's something we always preach. And one tactic in your battle against risk is to allocate a portion of your portfolio to international stocks. Create that broader diversification. And this is a great way to lower the overall risk of your portfolio. And the power of diversification allows this to be possible. And studies show that is if you have foreign equities and foreign exposure in your portfolio will be less risky generally overall. And one way to invest in international stocks is through ADRs. A lot of people don't know what those are. American Depository Receipts. So that's something everybody should understand what an ADR is. And an ADR is simply a stock traded here in the U.S. on U.S. exchanges, but represents a specific number of shares in a foreign corporation. Now, ADRs are bought and sold just like regular stock and are issued and sponsored in the U.S. by a bank or brokerage firm. Meaning they buy the shares, they hold the shares, and then they issue basically that ADR with the backing of those shares that are held in foreign ownership. And the advantage of ADRs are twofold. For individuals, ADRs are an easy and cost-effective way to buy shares in foreign companies. If you try to go and buy a foreign company, shares in a foreign company that are listed on a foreign exchange, it can be very expensive. And the administrative cost can be high. So this reduces the administrative cost and avoids foreign taxes on each transaction. Now, foreign entities like ADRs are there because they get more U.S. exposure, allowing them to tap into the wealthy North American equity market, right? They get more investor money out of that. And that's why they like having ADRs here. Now, there are some tax implications usually for ADRs that they get foreign tax credits, and it can be a little bit more complex. But in general, it's just like owning a stock. Now, there are risks that an investor must understand when investing in an ADR, and these risks are associated with any overseas asset, and that is foreign currency risk. That's always very big. But, you know, there's foreign currency risk with multinationals like, you know, GE, McDonald's, you know, IBM, big multinational companies that have revenue all over the world. So it's something you have to understand. But that's one of the reasons why having foreign stock exposure gives your portfolio a more diversified look and lowers risk over time is because, you know, when maybe our economy is not doing so well, our dollar is not doing so well, well, that means other foreign currencies are doing better. And that's why you kind of have that yin and that yang, at least generally. It always isn't lockstep, but generally that's kind of how it works. Now, later this hour on Invest Talk 101, we're going to talk more about managing risk in international investing. And our main talking point today is about limiting risk. So if this is a topic that's on your mind, and we know since 2008, investors are much more cautious, if not reticent, to put their money to work when it comes to exposing themselves to risk, we're going to explore that topic. But our discussion will take a turn towards your topics when you call and bring your question to us. We are always ready for your call. We want to hear from you. That is job number one each and every day on Invest Talk. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. So let's take this question now from our 24-hour listener line.
Hi there. Andrew calling from Sacramento, California. I am new to this. I'm looking to see if you have a recommendation where I can go to better understand the terminology and the things that you're talking about on the show. Sounds like you know what you're talking about and you're recommended by a mentor of mine. So if you can let me know that, it'd be great. I'll be listening for the podcast.
If you're just looking for terminology, I like investopedia.com. That's a great website. Just give basic definitions on all types of investing jargon that you may not get, and it can be from the basic to the very complex. And they even have some pretty good articles on there as well. So yeah, I like investopedia.com if you're looking for a resource to get better understanding of the jargon and that we use here on Invest Talk and generally in finance. And I understand it. You know, I was young, sitting in my grandpa's office listening to him, and that's the first just couple of years that I was I was 17, 18 years old, and I was just I didn't do much. I just kind of watched and learned the jargon. You know, what is cash flow? What's return on equity? What are all these things? All these words that come flying at me, and so don't feel bad if you get overwhelmed to start. It's something we all go through, and that's part of the learning process and the experience. So investopedia.com is a great tool. And I always say it's pretty interesting how much you learn over the years. It's just being involved, being at this for a certain period of time. I remember my grandpa, you could name any company, and he'd tell you the stock symbol. You could say any stock symbol, and he'd tell you the company. And I said, wow, how do you know that? How do you figure that out? And now today I'm the same way. You know, just after years and years, you just kind of pick it up and it becomes second nature to you. So keep at it, keep learning, and that's why we are here. Now, seven ways to limit investment risk. That's our talking point today on Invest Talk. And investors wonder what they can do to help them tackle the investment risk mountain. And we're going to go through seven of those steps and ways that you can go from not having a clue to really honing in on how much risk you should take and how to accomplish that. So that's one of our main talking points today. But I also want to talk about, first I want to talk about five real estate mistakes retirees make. Five real estate mistakes retirees make. I'm a licensed real estate agent, and I've seen these, some of these before, some of these mistakes, and they can be pretty simple. And, you know, a lot of people slip up in retirement and make these mistakes. So we're going to talk about that. And then I also want to get to Porter's Five Forces. Anybody ever heard of that? I remember this from college. This is what on our capstone class. We analyzed a company in a certain industry, and we had to write a report on it and that whole shebang. And it was a group project. And it was really all about Porter's Five Forces. Now, what are Porter's Five Forces? Porter's Five Forces is a way to look at a particular company. And what are the external forces that influence the firm? Okay, and when I say forces, I mean competitors, what industry are they in, who are their customers, what other types of products are there out there, what do they have to fight with to stay alive, to keep their business going, right? And understanding the relationship that each company has with these outside forces give you a much better understanding of the business and its ability to be profitable and stay profitable for the long term. So I think this is extremely important. I think this is going to be a good topic for everybody to kind of understand what these are. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through it in relation to Apple. What's the Porter's Five Forces analysis of Apple? Because we all kind of understand what Apple is and what Apple does, okay? And then I want to talk about carried interest. And this is a loophole in the American tax code. A lot of people don't understand what it is, don't know what it is, but I'm going to go over that and give you a sense of what that means and whether, in my opinion, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, okay? So those are my three talking points today, but ultimately I want to hear from you. Now, did you vote in our webinar survey? You helped decide the topic for our next webinar coming up on November 18th. You said you wanted more information on building a strong portfolio and finding strong dividend-paying stocks. So join Steve and myself November 18th at 6:30 p.m. You can sign up on investtalk.com.
Hi, my name is Paul, and I'm calling from Los Angeles. I listen to you on podcast. I have a question about a stock, Houlihan Lokey Incorporated, which is ticker symbol HLI, and it is independent investment bank focusing on mergers and acquisitions. It's had an IPO. It's about 3 months old, so it's a relatively new, not much of a record as far as charts go. But I wondered if you could comment on that type of investment this early on. I know IPOs tend to fluctuate up and down a lot from whatever they come in at their IPO. So comment on that, the short three-month span, how it's been doing, and if you have a valuation on it, that would be great as well. Thank you very much.
All right, he's looking at Houlihan Lokey Incorporated. Never heard of it. One of the reasons is because it is a recent IPO. It IPO'd in August of this year at $21 a share, and it's trading at $22.27 today, so right near its IPO price. Yields about 2.7%. No debt, which I like that. Return on equity is about 10%. Kind of ho-hum, nothing too exciting there. Revenues are last quarter went up 1% and earnings were up 8%, and that's a pretty big slowdown from just a few quarters ago when revenues were up 29% and earnings were up 58%. So you're having a little bit of slowing. I don't like this because it focuses on mergers and acquisition and financing. Restructuring might be good. We're near the top of the M&A cycle. If we're not at the top, we're near it. And with interest rates going up, I think there's just more downside to this type of a business than upside, at least in the near term. And when IPO, and usually this is a good example, when do companies go IPO? When things look rosy, things look good. And this is a company that's in an industry that is extremely cyclical. You go into recession, this thing's going to take a big hit. So when it comes to the fundamentals, they're okay. I don't hate them. I don't love them. They have good cash flow. I like that. But the profitability isn't anything to write home about. I would really like to look at others in this industry and see what they're doing. And why is Houlihan Lokey good? What makes them better than the next, investment banking firm? I've never heard of them. So, I kind of give it out of 10, 1 to 10, I'm going to give it a 4. Doesn't excite me at all. Now, our invest stock number is 888-99-CHART. You can say that your retirement portfolio today truly reflects your risk tolerance. Does it? Can you say it? One way to determine that is to use our free risk analysis tool. It's there, ready for you when you are on investtalk.com. I'm Justin Klein, and this is Invest Talk. 888-99-CHART is our number. Give us a call.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. They're highly touted, but there are drawbacks. Are commodities a bad investment? That's our talking point for Wednesday's podcast. We hope you'll put that on your schedule and join us then.
Let's go to Taylor in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Yes, that's correct.
Are you a cheesehead?
I am not. I'm a Vikings fan, believe it or not.
Oh, wow. You're in enemy territory.
That's exactly right.
Uh-oh. That's brave of you. Very brave of you.
So my question is, I'm relatively new to investing.
Okay.
And I want to be a long-term trend follower.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm kind of confused as to, you know, when am I chasing the market? You know, when is a good entry point? You know, what's a good exit point for being a trend follower?
Well, see, when what you're saying is kind of contradictory. You said you want to be a long-term investor, but you want to be a trend follower. And those are contradictory to themselves. And the reason is because a trend follower is really just a trader. You're kind of like a swing trader. You're not a day trader, but you're going to hold for, as long as that trend is going, right? And if that trend ends, okay. Well, then you move on to the next trend, right?
Sure.
Right? Okay. So being a long-term investor, though, is saying, okay, I like this company or I like this sector, and I'm going to allocate money to this company or sector based on the fundamentals long-term. And whether it goes into a bull phase or a bear phase, I'm just going to continue to invest in and hold that particular company or sector. And over the cycles, bull and bear cycles, you know, economic booms and busts, I'm going to come out ahead and that's how I'm going to invest. Now, you know, being a trend follower, that's really just about the chart. That's really all you need to know is what's the chart doing? Why is this sector or this stock doing well? Right? And I'm going to ride it until it's no longer working for me, and then I'm going to move on.
Okay.
Okay. Great. So that, awesome. And so it, does that make sense where how they don't really jive together?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I was, confusing myself reading multiple places. So yeah, that clarifies it for me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So if you want to be a trader and you want to be a trend follower, you really need to just focus on charts and understanding charts and when the trend, how do I identify when a trend A has started and B has ended?
Okay. Great. Yep. That's definitely was some confusion there. And that is, what I'm looking to do then. So.
All right. Thanks, Taylor. I appreciate the call. Hopefully that helps. And if you ever need any pointers on charting or anything, just give me a call or go over to investtalk.com, click on contact Justin and shoot me a message. I'll answer that as well.
Great. Appreciate your podcast. Thank you.
No problem, Taylor. Have a good one. So let's talk a little bit about our main talking point today. 7 ways to limit investment risk. Now, the first is to understand your financial picture. You have to first understand, how much can you afford to lose? Can I afford to lose this amount of money? And if the answer is no, then you should hold off on investing. Now, there are individuals who actually put money towards investing also while they have substantial debt. So we strongly recommend paying off as much debt as you possibly can. Now, mortgage, that might be a little bit different if you're young, but credit card debt, car debt, student loan debt, you know, if it's at a very low rate, you can probably keep a little bit of that. But anything high yielding, you need to pay that off first. Number 2, understand what you can afford to lose. How much can you afford to lose? Okay, you've realized you can afford to lose something. How much is that? And that's how much you should be putting to work. And you don't need to invest all the money all at once or even in the same thing. You should first cultivate ideas. Come up with ideas. What fits you, right? Are you a growth investor? Are you a trader? Are you a trend follower like Taylor? Are you a long-term investor, a dividend investor, blue chip stocks? What do you like? So start cultivating ideas and invest in what you know, what you understand, the sectors you understand. If you work in a particular industry, maybe focus on that industry. Right? If you have a particular hobby that relates to an industry, focus on that industry. Start there and then build your investment knowledge. 4, diversify. You need to stay diversified. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. These are all cliches, but don't think that, oh, well, this is the greatest thing in the world. This is the best company, the best stock. This is the best idea. And think that that's only where you need to allocate your money, or even just one particular sector. Start with a couple positions in one sector, then move on to the next and start educating yourself overall. Number five, time is your friend. The sooner you do it, the better. Don't put it off longer than you have to. Number six, avoid the train theory. Watching TV and reading up on what experts say, that can help you, but don't make that the sole reason for making any investment decision. And then seven, keep an eye on what you have. Don't be afraid to rebalance. Okay, and don't fall in love with a stock. Now we've reached the halfway mark in the hour. If you're a podcast listener, you'd like to talk to me live. Invest Talk is produced every weekday afternoon from 4 to 5 Pacific time. And our line is always open to you. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
This is Invest Talk for Tuesday, November 10th. And a reminder to use our free risk analysis tool on investtalk.com. Just scroll down the page until you see the heading Free Personal Risk Analysis.
Don't save your questions. If you have a question about the basics or anything advanced, doesn't matter. We are here for you, whether you're an experienced investor or a beginner, at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve. My name is Akhil. I'm calling from Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm a listener of your podcast. It's really good. I have a question about Micron Technology, MU. It's a good stock. It's a good PE and a good EPS. What do you think about this stock? Should I buy more at this price, or just wanted to know your opinion about it? So let me know. Thank you. Bye.
All right, he's looking at Micron Technology. This is a company that has been really taken to the woodshed over the past about year, is really when it peaked out. And that was around, let's see, 2015, it's about $36 a share, and now it's at $15.54. And the reason is because a year ago, revenues and earnings were growing dramatically, up 50%, and revenue 70% or so. Earnings were up 1,000%, 180%, depending on what quarter you're looking at. But last quarter, you had revenues down 15% and earnings down 55%. And earnings are supposed to fall this year. Or in 2016, 49%, but it can go back up 70% in 2017. They don't pay a dividend. Debt is pretty modest, which is good. And it's a low P ratio stock. So that's a good thing. But, enough. It's just in a bad trajectory. The whole semiconductor space is in a bad way right now. And Micron does this regularly. This is a company that's all over the place when it comes to its earnings performance. In 2009 they lost $2 a share. Then in 2010 they made $1.30, and then by 2012 they were losing $1.10, and then all the way to 2014 they made $1.13. Really all over the place. I don't like companies like that. I don't like companies that are, you never know what to expect. One quarter might be great, the next might be terrible. You're going to get this massive volatility. And it has good cash flow. That's good. The return on equity is about 17%, which is down a little bit from 2014. I just don't like the trajectory of what they do, or what their performance has been, and how all over the place they are. So it's really the business is just tough. It's just a tough business to be in. There's a lot of competition in the semiconductor space. It's I would say this, it's relatively cheap, but I think it's going to get a lot cheaper. I wouldn't touch this probably until it gets down into the single digits, and then I would think about picking up Micron. And that was Micron Technologies, MU is the symbol. Now I want to talk a little bit about Porter's Five Forces. Porter's Five Forces. I think this is a great topic to cover because it's something that if you were in business school, you should know what these are. And this is really how you analyze a company and how well it can maintain its business model and its profitability over the long term. And there's, like I said, there's five forces. Number one is competitive rivalry and competition within the industry. Number two is bargaining power of buyers or consumers. Number three is bargaining power of suppliers, right? If the company needs supplying products. Number four, threat of substitutes or substitution. So for customers to just go buy something else instead of your product or your services. Number five is threat of new entrants or new companies coming in to that industry and competing with you. How easy is that? So what we're going to do is we're going to go over this in relation to Apple, because Apple is, everyone kind of understands Apple. If you don't, you've been living under a rock for the past decade or so. So number one, competitive rivalry. And this is a very strong force. This is probably the strongest force that can derail a company. And this is exactly what derailed BlackBerry. It was a competitor, right? They came and ate, Apple came and ate BlackBerry's lunch. So the worry is, who might come and eat Apple's lunch? And there's a lot of competition in this industry. From companies like BlackBerry, Samsung, LG, Google. And they're aggressively competing with Apple. There's a lot of innovation going on with new cameras and new devices and, you know, cloud computing and a lot of things that can that other companies can offer that are somewhat similar to what Apple does. Maybe in some ways better. Some ways just adequate in case a customer wanted to switch. So firms are very aggressive. You see this from advertising, from Samsung. And that is probably the biggest threat to Apple. And that's usually the biggest threat to most companies. And this is why it's a very strong force for any type of company, is competition. And part of that is switching costs, right? You could have a strong competitor that has strong product offerings, but how hard is it to switch? Are customers tightly, are they held tightly because it's going to be so hard to go from using this product to another product? And this, that actually happens a lot in the technology space, usually B2B. Think of Oracle. Oracle has these massive database systems for companies and they manage it, and you know, it's this whole system. And to get up and take all that data and move it to another system is difficult. It's not easy. Whereas the average customer for Apple products, I don't want to buy an iPhone. Okay, I'll go buy a Samsung. It's not that hard. Okay. And that's one reason why Apple, but there are some, there's some barriers, right? Because one is familiarity with the iOS system, the operating system, and getting going and learning the Android system. Some people don't want to do that. iCloud. A lot of data. It's one of the reasons why iCloud is getting more integrated into what Apple does. They want you to put more files and pictures and videos and text messages and stuff into the cloud, because if you move, you're going to lose a lot of that stuff if you move to another platform. And there's also integration with other devices, right? I know me, I have an iPad and an iPhone. If I can text, I can use iMessage on my iPhone and then go to my iPad and keep that iMessage conversation going. I don't need to have my phone, especially when I'm at home. I don't usually touch my phone. I usually have my iPad near me. So that's a nice integration that I like. And that, it also integrates with my Mac at home. I have a Mac Mini. And I can even text message on that through iMessage. Okay? So, and if I'm on my iPad and my phone rings, it shows me on my iPad that my phone is ringing. And so that's something else, that the switching cost, that if I go and bought a Samsung and go to Android, well, now I don't have other devices that integrate with that. So that's one way that Apple tries to reduce or increase those switching costs. And other companies do that as well. And then number two, bargaining power of Apple's customers. This goes back to the switching costs. That's part of it, right? And then also the size of individual buyers. So, and for Apple, it's actually a good thing, because there's so many buyers, if one switch is not going to kill their business. Whereas if another type of company, maybe they have only a few customers. One of those is Ambarella, is a good example of this. This is a chip company that supplies a ton of, most of their business goes to GoPro, is GoPro chips. So if GoPro doesn't do well, Ambarella is not going to do well. And if they lose GoPro, their whole business really is in trouble. Whereas Apple, if they lose one iPhone user or iPad user or Mac user, it's not going to kill their business. So understanding how big their customers are is important. And so that's usually a weak force, because most of the time the customer bases are pretty diverse. Okay, so those are the first two Porter's five forces. I'm going to get to the last three coming up. I'm registered investment advisor Justin Klein, and you should know that Steve will be in La Jolla December 2nd for individual retirement reviews, then in San Ramon on December 9th, and these are first-come, first-served dates, so reserve your hour before they fill up. And if you live too far from our California offices, you can always meet up via Skype or just telephone, and you can reserve your time by going to investtalk.com and clicking on the schedule a meeting button. Or just call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts.
InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial. If you're considering using the services of a professional investment advisor, click on the Investments tab on investtalk.com. These are programs designed to meet specific criteria that match up with the goals and preferences of people looking for growth, income, and more manageable risk. Find out more on investtalk.com.
Hello, this is Matt calling from Hilliard, Ohio, listening on iTunes. I was wondering if you could tell me, how do you switch a 401k to an IRA instrument? My situation is, I'm currently working. I'm 42, and I have a 401k that gives all the plain vanilla mutual fund options. Is there a way to ask the broker to switch that to a more active IRA or more active funds where I can invest in individual stocks? Thanks for your time. Excellent show.
Yes, you can do that if it's an old 401k, meaning you're no longer working there. There's a caveat to that. If you're over 59 and a half and your 401k plan allows in-service rollovers, you can do that as well if you're still working there. But generally, if you're still working at the company, you can't roll it into an IRA. But everybody should roll their old 401k into an IRA, and it's pretty simple. We help people do this all the time. All you do is fill out. You open a new brokerage account. We help our clients open a new brokerage account. All of our clients have their own brokerage account. It's not our money. It's the client's money. And then what we do is we get a statement, hopefully the most recent statement of that IRA, or sorry, of that 401k, and then we fill out what is an ACAT transfer form. It's what it's called, an ACAT transfer form, and we put the account details on it, and we submit that to the brokerage firm, and they journal all that money over from the 401k into the IRA. Now, some assets might not be able to be transferred as easily. Maybe they're proprietary funds, so those might have to be liquidated. But then once you sell that cash can come over into that IRA. It's a pretty simple process. There's no tax consequences to it at all. It's pretty easy as long as you have somebody that knows kind of how to set up a brokerage account and things like that. So if you need help, give us a call. Or you can just go to investtalk.com, click on Contact Justin, Contact Steve, and we will help you through the process. Now let's talk. Let's get back to Porter's five forces. I talked about the first two before the break, and that was the competitive nature of the industry, and then also the bargaining power of customers, right? The buyers, and we're relating this to Apple. How is Apple? Let's analyze this as if we're looking and analyzing Apple as a company. Number three is bargaining power of Apple's suppliers. This is usually a fairly weak force because suppliers of products are usually pretty easy to find. Some industries might not be if they need materials that are only one company or a handful of companies could get, or maybe they need products that only a handful of companies know how to produce. They have technology that no other company has that really will benefit them. I'm thinking of something like the technology for automated cars, right? Driverless cars. There are kind of a lot of companies working on that, but what companies have the best, right? And whoever's trying to buy that technology is going to have to pay a lot for it, because if it's the best, they really need that. So that's just a good example. But for Apple, it's a weak force. Why? Because even though they have 200 different suppliers, they can go and find, they're just chips and screens, and why Apple's great is because they put it all together into this great device with a great operating system that works really well, right? But the chips are pretty simple. The screens are, there's a lot of companies that make screens and chips. Okay, so it's not a big worry for them. They can always find new chip makers, and they can push them down on price and get good margins out of them. And overall, the supply is really abundant. So really, Apple doesn't have to really worry about the bargaining power of their suppliers. They have a lot of control over their suppliers. Okay, and then number four is threat of substitutes. Substitutes are, you can go use a regular camera instead of a iPhone camera. You can go make a landline phone call. You can go use a flip phone. But most of the time, people aren't gonna do that, because they're not gonna give up the flexibility and the ease of use and the versatility of an iPhone. Okay, and then there's one more, which I'm gonna get to after the break. Now, why not join our InvestTalk Insider list? You have instant access to lots of easy-to-read informational sheets on important investing concepts, plus valuable lists like dividend-focused ETFs, commodity ETFs, REITs, etc. Just go to InvestTalk.com, scroll down to the headline, and sign up for free to become an InvestTalk Insider.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. Join Steve and Justin for our next webinar. This one came from our first ever listeners poll. You came up with the topic, building a strong portfolio with less risk, and finding strong dividend-paying stocks. The date is November 18th, 6:30 p.m. Pacific Time. It's free, and you can sign up right now on investtalk.com.
Let's go to Bill in Santa Cruz. How are you doing, Bill?
Hey, good, Justin. Thank you. So I'm interested in WNN, Wynn Resorts, Limited. And I have a question about it. It's kind of just like how the stock is now as far as like a chart goes, because I see it goes up and down a lot over a several-year period, and it averages a certain, and I know it's probably connected to the economy in China and that, which is constantly fluctuating, but it seems to me like a stock like this that has this kind of strong up and down trend, if you buy it at the right point or at a good point, average point, and then you're willing to wait a couple of years, for 100 or more percent appreciation, that would be a good return. But what do you think of the stock? Is it pays a good dividend? Does that dividend look stable to you, etc.?
Well, I don't know if that line of thinking is exactly correct. I mean, their business has been deteriorating really ever since 2013. There's been a lot of crackdown on graft and corruption in China, at least generally. And that has caused a lot of these people that were making a lot of money through corruption to, and they were going to Macau and they were spending money there. They've kind of stopped that. And that's one of the reasons why Macau and Las Vegas Sands and Wynn Resorts have not been doing very well. And Wynn Resorts last quarter, the last really four quarters, sales have been down about 25 to 30%. Earnings down 50 to 60%, 65%. So it's in a strong downtrend in the stock. You're right. It is in a strong downtrend. Will it turn? Who knows? It's hard to know exactly when this is going to turn. You could probably get this much lower if these problems continue to persist. Now, they do intrigue me, I'll tell you that. And I'm sure they intrigue you. That's why you're calling. You know, will they be higher 10 years from now? I would say probably. Are you going to be able to keep that dividend? Well, right now, the dividend yield or dividend payout ratio on Wynn is 208%. So, no, I don't think that dividend is safe. Okay. So, yeah. So, I don't think it's safe at all. Now, they don't have, you know, a ton of debt. You know, I think there's some positives with it. If I was going to pick Wynn or Las Vegas Sands, I'm going to pick Las Vegas Sands. So, what'd you say?
Are you also in the stock?
Say that one more time.
Las Vegas Sands is more of a United States-oriented stock than Wynn.
Well, it's just stronger financially. It still has positive free cash flow, where Wynn's free cash flow is negative. It has a better balance sheet. Its payout ratio is only 88% versus 200% on Wynn. So, you know, if I'm picking one, I'm picking Las Vegas Sands. Now, both of them could continue lower, certainly. And probably you have to say more likely to continue lower. But I'm not ready to jump into either of them quite yet, but I like what you're thinking. I like where your head's at, but I would need to see it's a trade above the 100-day moving average. That's what I'm keeping an eye on. If either one of these can start to trade above the 100-day moving average, then I'll start getting a little bit more intrigued on Las Vegas Sands and Wynn. But until then, I would just keep on your watch list and watch them. Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it. Now, I want to get to the last Porter Five Forces, the fifth force, which is the threat of new entrants into an industry. And there's three barriers to getting into an industry. One is high capital requirements. Number two is high cost of brand development. Number three is capacity of potential new entrants. Now, to get into the mobile phone business, to compete with Apple, that would take a lot of money to develop that supply chain, to build those phones, develop them, a lot of money. Create a brand like Apple, I mean, it would be massive. Capacity for potential new entrants, there are a lot of companies that are willing and able to do that. Samsung was a new entrant at some point, but today, I don't think there's a lot. So there's not a lot of worry for them. So really for Apple, it's all about competition. Other companies developing better products than theirs. Now our hour is up. Both Steve Peasley and I, thank you for visiting and investing this hour with us. A reminder of Steve's new checkup dates in San Ramon. It's December 9th. We'll also be in La Jolla as well. That's December 2nd. You can reserve your hour by going to investtalk.com. Click on the schedule a meeting button. I'm registered investment advisor and licensed real estate agent Justin Klein. And for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP Financial, thank you for listening. And we hope you'll join us again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-400-8400.
855-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial.